Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Racing Hotspot. My name is Devin Poslesny. I'm joined by my co-host here, Mr. Jordan Jenkins. Jordan, first of all, how are you?
I've been pretty busy these last couple weeks, but I'm good overall.
I was gonna say, you're in the home stretch, right? You got to graduate in a couple weeks and then
19 days.
Join the real world with the rest of us.
19 days.
But who's counting? Who's counting?
Yeah, exactly. I'm not counting or anything.
Of course. So Jordan joining us remotely here through FaceTime. So this is cool. But hopefully only a couple more episodes and then he'll be back in person with us. Real quick, just a quick piece of housekeeping. I want to apologize for the last couple weeks. As I mentioned in the last episode, and I'll say it again, as I said then, I lost some wisdom in a dental surgery, and it took a little bit longer for me to get, like, fully recovered. So a couple weeks of just not being able to really talk much. I did a couple broadcasts here and there, but it was just, I would talk for an hour and a half and be down for, like, a day or two. So it was a little bit rough, but then last week, Jordan and I just could not figure out a good quality time to do it. We felt like any chance, or at least I did, felt like any chance we were going to do was going to be kind of rushed, or we were going to be half asleep. So,
I was like, we can do this time, and then all of a sudden you had, I can't have to do this now.
Yeah, we both were busy, but here we are post Dega. And of course, Long Beach for IndyCar and China for Formula One, seemed to be a fairly entertaining weekend. I know coming into the NASCAR weekend, it seemed like all the talk was, we're going to race on Monday. We're going to have a doubleheader Monday, rain. And per Mother Nature, it didn't rain at all.
It just rained overnight.
Yeah. So, nothing major there. All was good. And then here we are, ready to run the 500-mile race. And pretty quiet, pretty clean until the last 2,000 feet. We'll talk about that. But real quick, before we get going, let's talk about some short track news, because I know Jordan's got some news, as well as some other things that have been happening. Monadnock Speedway had their season opener this past weekend on the brand new asphalt. Seemed to be a successful weekend over there. But Jordan, I'll let you take this one since you kind of are the short track expert out of the two of us.
I mean, I never thought I would be more of an expert than you, but here we are. But
I'm good on the national. I'm good at the national stuff. You got the local stuff.
But obviously, obviously, as many of our audience know, as I'm the announcer / broadcaster for the Modified Racing Series upcoming, and we are 12 days away from our opener on May 4th at New London Waterford Speed Bowl over in Connecticut, 12 days away from that. And on Saturday, it became official, which I kind of already knew, but it was official because I was officially there, is... I am now the Saturday race announcer over in Epping at Star Speedway. And I was over there on Saturday, met the owner, Bobby Weber, met the race director, met a lot of the staff. I didn't really meet a lot of the drivers, but it was a busy day because it was their open practice, kind of like what a lot of the tracks do, like Monadnock has done it. Lee's been doing it. Star had theirs on Saturday, but I'm their Star Speedway Saturday announcer, so...
Nice. Well, that's awesome, and I know Star Speedway is a great place to race, and we've covered a couple of Legends car races over there, and it's just a fantastic venue, fantastic facility, and the ownership is great as well. I know Caitlin Osborne does a lot of the racing videos over there, so and she usually uses the broadcast, the PA announcer audio, so cool for you to kind of... Little fun fact that if she's still doing that this year, which I don't see why she wouldn't be, but if she's still doing that this year, then some of your audio will be captured, and she's great to work with as well. But no, that's awesome. Glad to hear it. Glad to hear that you're, you know, as you said, you're 19 days away and you're already lining stuff up for this summer. So
it was a good turnout for the open practice day at Star too. We had one modified for all of them, but we had a lot of late models there. We had some trucks there. We had a couple bandoleros there. We had Legends cars, Dorf car series drivers were there. So there was a good turnout overall. It was about a 4-hour practice day. So I was pretty much at start from 11:30 in the morning to about 4:30 in the evening. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. Now, it's like I said, when you told me that, I was super excited for you. I think it's going to be great for you to get that, you know, that short track experience. You worked with the Race Day TV now, used to be the organization that Mark would do. You worked with them for a little bit, so super cool. Of course, you worked with us for a little bit. You're still technically on the payroll, but happy to hear that you're getting things set up for your next step.
And over the next couple of days, I find out what I've told you, but I won't say here yet.
Yeah, of course. Another opportunity in the pipeline. We'll see.
But obviously, if I get that, maybe our podcast becomes a little better because now we'll have some insider information.
We'll see on that one. But yeah, no, it should be a good summer for you. And of course, personally, you and I are going to, with my family, we're going to New Hampshire Motor Speedway, which we're still trying to figure out if we're going to do anything fun with that. Maybe not necessarily anything official, but there's nothing saying we can't walk around with microphones and unofficially interview fans and things like that. But we'll see. We'll figure that one out. Like I said, I got to reach out to my pals in New Hampshire Motor Speedway and see what all the logistics to that is, just to make sure we do everything right. But then also where you and I personally are going to the Daytona race in August, that'll be a lot of fun. So got a fun summer coming up. And
yeah, we do.
Yeah, and I know Daytona weekend we'll do some recording at the track, even if it's just we do the show from the camper on the track property, you know, not necessarily do anything outside of that because I'd hate to get in trouble with NASCAR, but we'll figure it out. But it'll be fun. Cool. Well, like I said, glad to hear that. Happy to hear that. Seemed like short track racing wise, as you mentioned, a lot of stuff up here is just kind of that open practice and knock the rust off, get ready for, you know, next weekend and or the weekend after for opening days.
Yeah, Star Speedway's opener is this Saturday, the 27th. So
nice. All right, now are you announcing that? Are you covering that? I'm assuming you are.
I will not be there, no.
Oh, all right. Bummer.
I'll be missing the first 2 weeks, but obviously because of I have senior stuff going on here, so.
College. Ugh. All right. So real quick, I'll talk about Formula One. I know you watched IndyCar, so we'll talk about that, and then we'll talk about the NASCAR weekend at Dega. But I'll admit, I didn't catch the full Formula One race, but I did just watch the highlights.
Well, it did start at 3 a.m.
That's true. That is very true. But I planned on, I did catch the highlights of it, and it seemed like a very routine race, but one situation that I only know one of the drivers, the other one was an Aston Martin, but one situation that I'm seeing a lot of stuff about on social media was Daniel Ricciardo and an Aston Martin. I can't remember which Aston Martin it was, but coming into turn one, Ricciardo's slowing down and he gets rear-ended from the back end from one of the Aston Martins to the point where he went up in the air. Really kind of a race-ending type accident with the Formula One cars, how, I don't want to say fragile they are, but you know what I mean, Jordan. And it was kind of like, I caught wind of it Sunday morning when I woke up, and a lot of people were giving Ricciardo flack for quote-unquote brake checking and this, that, and the other thing. And, when I look back at the replay, it seemed like the guy from behind hit him. And it's like, I'm so confused. And even Ricciardo comes on Twitter or social media and is like, I've been taught as a driver to focus on what's in front of me, not necessarily what's behind me. I mean, and what's the unsaid rule about the rule about insurance claims? If you get hit from behind at the stoplight, it's not your fault, you know, necessarily. So that was interesting. Like I said, I kind of caught wind of it. I watched the replay of it. Looked like one of those misjudging going into turn one or turn, I don't remember which turn it was, but it was a heavy braking zone. And it just seemed like a misjudgment. And I don't think it was Ricciardo's fault. I don't know if you caught this at all.
No, I did not.
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird. But hey, Formula One's also different than NASCAR in the sense, you know, where the stewards are involved and they might say, well, you know, you did slow down sooner than normal. Like, they have all that telemetry, so who knows? But it was just something that I saw and I was like, the rules over here are that if you hit somebody, you're at fault, you know, unless that person purposely brake checks, but it didn't look like he was. So anyways, Formula One race in general was just a routine Formula One race. Overall, a good weekend. McLaren doing well. Red Bull doing their normal stuff. And I think overall it was a successful weekend out in China, or over in China for Formula One. Let's talk real quick. IndyCar, I started watching the race, but I didn't watch the full race. I know you said you watched it.
Yeah.
So I'll let you take that one.
Obviously, they were at Long Beach. The Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach, I think, was the official word, the official name of it, I should say. But I think it was a lot of action. I mean, obviously, when they did green flag pit stops, obviously, the field kind of separated. But overall, they kind of came back and got it. But Scott Dixon ended up winning that one. There was the last five laps, really, it was a really great battle between originally Joseph Newgarden and Scott Dixon. Newgarden was running like running like 5/10 of a second quicker than Dixon, because obviously Dixon pitted earlier than Newgarden did. And there was 85 laps in this one, and then Alex Palou and Colton Herta joined the frame, and Herta kind of bumped Newgarden out of the way a little bit, not on purpose or anything. But Newgarden was kind of upset that Herta was not penalized on it, because he's like, he just bumped me out of the way. But there was nothing in the race officials for IndyCar, didn't look at it or anything, and they deemed it was accidental. And it was a great battle between Dixon and Herta, but Dixon ended up pulling off for his first win of the year.
Sorry, my mic was muted. Nice. That's awesome. I mean, from what I saw, it seemed like it was a very, like, the highlights I saw was a very routine, routine race. But overall, excited, like, seems like a good race overall.
Yeah. Christian Rasmussen was one of the two drivers that did not finish, with Scott McLaughlin being the other one. Rasmussen kind of just got loose out of one of the turns, kind of nailed the wall, but he also hit other rookie Jack Harvey.
Mm.
Harvey had some damage, but he ended up continuing on. But Rasmussen obviously got a DNF. But besides that, it was pretty much caution. It was actually, I think it was caution free besides that, but good battle at the end for IndyCar.
It definitely, I mean, that facility is historic, obviously, and it is very unique, and I think that's just fantastic with how they've set it up, and, you know, they've crafted it. And I started catching it, like seeing it, probably 10 years ago when I started doing the Racing Hotspot web show, and it was just like, it was perfected then and now, you know, it's even more so. I haven't done much research on this, and I will preface this with that, but I heard rumors of NASCAR trying to get involved in the ownership of IMSA, or not IMSA, Long Beach, which IMSA races at, and I'm looking at the results of the IMSA race there from this weekend. I just remember they raced there, but it's interesting that NASCAR wants to potentially get involved in that. And I think if we simplify it down, it's even so much so that they're just looking for a new home in Southern California, you know,
right,
with no immediate timeline on the Fontana redo, which they've left the parts of the track that they agreed to. Everything else has been torn up, which is kind of really sad to see, but, with no immediate timeline on the Fontana redo, Where does NASCAR go? You know, we took a year off this year. Well, Can we survive another year without NASCAR in Southern California besides the Coliseum, which reports are already saying that they're not going back to the Coliseum? So it's like, what are we doing? So it should be interesting to kind of follow. I know NASCAR, obviously Roger Penske owns IndyCar, and they have a really good relationship with NASCAR. So I don't think it would be anything where they need to necessarily worry about IndyCar getting the boot. Like, I don't think it would be anything where it's like NASCAR now has ownership of Long Beach and says, see you later. But it definitely is something I think people are considering, they're thinking about. So, yeah. IMSA ran 100 minutes, by the way, at Long Beach this weekend. The overall top three, we had Badeas, sorry, Sebastian, finishing third. I'm going to say all these last names wrong. Nick Yelicki. So Nick finished second, and then Pippo Durani finished number one. Again, my apologies for completely butchering those names. But overall, from what I caught from that, just looking real quick on the recap on online, pretty. The key word for today's show is routine. Pretty routine race. 10 GTP entries, 17 GTD entries, running on the 1.968-mile course in Long Beach. Any other thoughts from you regarding IndyCar or any other series we've talked about so far?
I think I hit everything that I wanted to talk about.
No, I agree.
I did Formula One or the IMSA. I watched IndyCar, Xfinity, and Cup. So
I was gonna say I totally missed the ARCA race. I'm assuming.
I did not watch the ARCA race either.
Yeah, so we won't talk much about that.
I mean, all I know is that Jake Finch had green flag, flagged the flag, and there was one caution, which was the mid break. So,
all right. Well, there's the ARCA recap. No, I mean, I saw
from people on X that it was kind of a boring race. I mean, when you have a driver lead flag the flag and the only stoppage really the halfway break, I mean, it makes sense.
I was going to say, so you have a driver that leads flag the flag. The only stop is the halftime break, like you said. And by the way, they're racing at Talladega. That's like three strikes, you're out. like here we are. Like, I can understand if they're running at like a road course, you know, driver goes flag to flag, but like it's Talladega. What happened? So interesting to see what the people's responses and feelings are on that as we go along. But let's talk about Xfinity. I will admit I caught the last. Well, I watched most of it, but I caught the last at least stage and a half. I saw the whole cup race, but from what I saw, the Xfinity race was pretty calm, other than a couple accidents here and there, but overall, nothing too crazy.
Right.
Yeah. Hard hit for Allgaier down the back straightaway, which of course then sparked the conversation on social media about why did that wall jet out and blah, 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 which we'll talk about in a second. And then pretty standard finish for the end of the race. Hold on, I'm trying to go ahead, talk. I assume you wanted to say something else.
I mean, it was good to see Jesse Love finally get that win, obviously, with especially with how he's been so far this year. With the three or four pole wins, whatever it is that right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, so obviously good to see him getting victory, and especially at a track like Talladega, not a bad way to get your first NASCAR National Series win.
I was just about to say, I remember there was something I wanted to talk about, and it was Jesse Love. So go ahead, keep going.
But I mean, obviously, you look at this at the finishing order, and it was definitely a reason why Talladega is considered a surprise track, because I mean, not because Jesse Love won, but I mean, I'd rather Herb finish second. Obviously, he's good. Anthony Alfredo finished third. Leland Honeyman Jr. finished fourth. Brendan Poole finished fifth. Sheldon Creed sixth. Cesar Baccarella finished seventh. Matt DiBenedetto, who's obviously kind of back in the Xfinity Series, obviously, over the last couple weeks. Well, we've been gone. Jeff Burton finished ninth. Kush finished 10th. I mean, Haley Deegan finished 12th for her best finish in the Xfinity Series. I mean, you had all these drivers that usually aren't finishing in the up in the front are right here in the top 10 at Talladega, top 12. And because you have like guys like Allgaier, Mayer, Clemens, Ryan Truex, Brandon Jones, Kligerman. You had all these guys that are big names in the Xfinity Series really not finished the race. So that was, it was up for grabs for anyone. Obviously, you had a star like Jesse Love win, but great day for the people you don't really see at the front of the field.
Lots of talk there at the end, and I'm going through Instagram right now, just kind of getting a recap of the Xfinity race. We had a lot going on, as Jordan and I both are hockey fans. Hockey playoffs started this weekend, so I watched a lot of hockey yesterday with the NASCAR race on the laptop next to me. But one of the things that was one of the big talking points was Riley Herbst not going with Haley Deegan at the end of the race. Right, I think it was the last lap. Herbst got a run coming, and he elects to just go to the outside and leaves Haley Deegan out to dry. And lots of talk on it about why wouldn't he go with her? What's up? Was her car damaged? From what I saw, it wasn't. And then, of course, we can all imagine where the general public went with it. Well, it's because of she, not he, you know, which I think is ridiculous. But it's interesting that he didn't go, and I don't know why he wouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was in turn one and two. So, like, even if you come up and you push her past, let's say he pushes her past Jesse Love, if he wanted to win, he could then pull out off turn four and try and pass her. Like, it wasn't like they were coming to turn. If they were coming to the checkered flag in the tri-oval, I can understand you don't want to push and get stuck behind her. You want to go out to the outside and go around her. But it was in turn one. Like, they were a good 2 miles away from the end of the race, and he dumped her. So I don't know, especially since they're four teammates. That's the other thing. Like, some people are like, well, they're not on the same team. It's like, we know that at Daytona and Talladega and even Atlanta now, it doesn't matter if you're on the same team. You run for the same manufacturer.
Right.
You know, Ford would rather have it be 1-2, whether it be Herbst or Deegan out in front, but they'd rather be 1-2 instead of 11th and 12th, you know, whatever. So definitely interesting. One other thing that happened. One of the other things that happened was, of course, this Austin Hill getting turned from the lead off of the bumper of Parker Kligerman, and this was kind of the big one that happened, although it wasn't a huge accident. What's your take
from the 48
on? Sorry, what's your take on that? Was it simply just a racing deal, or a bad bump, or just being too aggressive coming to the end?
Since it was near the end, I would say it was just a racing deal at that point, because obviously that's just typical Talladega, typical super speedway racing in general. Mm-hmm. We see that Daytona all the time with that. Right. So I think it was mainly just a racing deal coming to the near the end of the race, and everyone just wanted to be aggressive to try to get it to the front.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It doesn't look like it was like Kligerman moved or purposely spun him out. Like, I think it was just aggressive racing, which is what you expect at the end of these races, and just the bump in the wrong place in the entrance to the corner. You see it at Daytona all the time. You see it at Talladega all the time. You're now starting to see it at Atlanta. You know, the rule was a couple years ago was bump me down the straightaway, but get the heck off of me in the corners. And I don't know if that's still kind of the rule now with the different race cars and how they're kind of more aerodynamically sound to an extent. But it's definitely interesting. And the ending was very... very cool, calm, and collected. I mean, you had Love, and I can't remember who was the one battling him, but then you had number 35 spin, hit the grass, he slides down and out of the way, everyone else stays away from him, and it's not a big accident like we saw on Sunday. So overall, I think the Xfinity race was good. I think it was a good race. I think they had, you know, they ran well, and they had a good, clean race. I'm going to see if I can find, just for my own reference, because I want to talk about that accident with Allgaier, because Allgaier spins off down the back straightaway, and when this happens, he hits the inside wall, but he hits it where the wall jets out for the safety vehicle exit. We've seen this a couple different times at Daytona, Talladega, and of course the conversation is, why? Why has this happened? Why is this wall jetting out? Things like that. Here's my take on this. You have to have a place for your safety vehicles to enter and exit the racetrack, right? You need to make sure that they are not traveling down the length of the back straightaway to then duck into the racing line to be able to, or racing surface to get to an accident. They got to be quick. So, and it's either you're going to have, like, here's the logic. So you're either going to have the wall jet out, or you're going to have the wall go straight, and then the wall's going to curve in. Like, they need to make the room for the vehicles to come out. And at the end of the day, I think I'm going to trust NASCAR's judgment here and the safety and R&D and everything. Having that jet out was probably safer than having it curve back in. You know, so I don't really know if there's another solution to it. It's just unfortunately one of those situations.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So, yeah, like I said, I don't really know if there's a way you can go around it or if you can make amends or whatever, but it's just unfortunately one of those situations that you just kind of have to deal with. Glad he was okay, you know, and always, you know, anytime you hit the inside wall, it hurts. And even if you hit the outside wall, as we found out with Eric Jones yesterday, he hit the outside wall and went to the infield care center. They okayed him, and then he said, no, guys, my back is still bothering me. He wound up spending a couple hours at the ER. He was checked and released around midnight and is back home now. But definitely that's something to keep in mind going forward, because I hope he races this weekend at Dover. But who knows? You know? So, any other thoughts real quick on the Xfinity race from you?
I don't think so, no. I think you kind of hit all the points on the Xfinity race on the wall and stuff.
Okay. So the big topic coming out of the Cup race was not only the big hits and Michael McDowell dominating the day and being in the right place at the right time and then unfortunately getting turned in the trial vote, which I have an opinion on that, but a lot of people believe that he made contact with Brad's bumper. I told you what I thought happened. We'll talk about that in a minute. But one of the other conversations that came up was, once again, second Daytona Talladega race, where we are running half throttle to save gas. You saw it at Daytona during the 500. You see it again yesterday, and people are so upset about it on Twitter or X. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know why, but I want to hear your thoughts before I throw my thoughts out there, because I'll just keep talking.
In terms of what?
In terms of the saving gas, you know, running half throttle to save gas, and people not okay with it, thinking that, you know, we need to be running 100% 24/7. This is what we're paid to do. It doesn't matter if we're going to save gas or not. We need to go for the product of racing for the fan.
Right. I mean, obviously it was the same thing with the 500 with the fuel mileage, but I mean, that's what you're gonna get. I mean, that's been super speedway racing, and that's what it's always gonna be. I mean, even the drivers have said that themselves. I mean, it sucks, but even drivers have said it sucks, but it's what they have to do.
Right.
But I mean, I don't think it takes away from the race. Like, I still thought yesterday and was still pretty good.
No, I agree. I agree. I think, you know, at the end of the day, so let me back up. Here's my two cents on this. Super speedway racing is strategy, right? We just talked about team orders. You know, Ford would rather finish 1-2. Doesn't matter who's up front. They'd rather finish 1-2 instead of 11th and 12th, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we've had that for years, especially since the Gen 6 car, where it was known that, hey, we're going to have a Chevy-only meeting. Meaning, and then you saw it at the race. All the Chevys lined up. All the Chevys ran in a line. It doesn't matter. Nobody was moving. Nobody was budging. We're all pitting together. You know, we're all going to stay together. That's team orders. That's strategy. Strategy has been a huge part of not only the sport, but of super speedway racing for decades. I mean, I remember back to the two-car tandem days where every driver had five or six driver radios that they could switch to, and they could be like, hey, I'm back here with you, Denny Hamlin. Let's work together. Hamlin comes up, locks bumpers, and the two of them go to the front. You know, and it's all about strategy, and it's all about that. This is now the latest thing in the strategy game. I understand where people are coming from, where it's like, we're not going 100%. We're not going 100%. We need to be going 100%. It would make the racing better. I don't know if it would, because I agree with you. It was still good racing, and I think that at the end of the day, what we saw yesterday was very typical of what we've seen for the last 5, 6, 7 years. You know, we have a segment of the race where we're just going to run single file. We're going to log laps. I mean, last year at Daytona in the August race, I remember the first two stages, they were side by side, and that third stage was 100-something laps long, and they all just single filed out and ran the top lane the whole time. And I remember that because my friend came with, my best friend's husband came with, and he looked at me and said, what are they doing? They were running really crazy in the first two stages, and now we're just single file. That's what they do. You know, you're trying to save your car to the end, because if you're not in the game at the end, there's no point. So it's that's part of it. If you take away the telemetry, right, you take away the lap times, you take away Fox being able to say, oh yeah, Chase Elliott's only doing 25% throttle. Like, take away all that. In my opinion, the racing product did not look different than 10 years ago. Well, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
10 years ago, they were doing the two-car tandem. That's different. But
right.
But like, but I'm just saying, like, and again, that's my opinion, and I think that you have strategy. And this is the part that kind of concerns me, though. NASCAR to the Daytona 500 comes out and says, we're going to look into it. How are you going to change it? How are you going to make this, quote-unquote, better? And the reason why it concerns me is because any time, in my opinion, any time a sanctioning body says, we're going to fix this, they do the opposite. You know, NASCAR with the next gen car. It's going to be the best thing ever. We're on year three, and it's now starting to produce some good racing, which is a typical timeline when it comes to new cars. I mean, the Xfinity car came out, and for the first year or two, people were like, this car sucks. And now look at it. You know, so it's. Anytime the NASCAR says we're going to fix it, I fear that it makes it worse. Your strategy is your strategy, you know, and the only way I can think NASCAR says we're going to fix it is if you come out and say you have to hit this certain lap time, right? You need to make this lap time. It means that you're going 100% throttle. Well, And then now you're going to have the fans come out and say, well, why are you dictating what they're doing on the racetrack? They're the drivers. So it's like, it's such a slippery slope. And I just personally don't understand what the whole issue is. You know, oh, it's not making for the best product out there. This looks like the same exact thing we were doing in the Gen 6 car. You know, like, I don't understand. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't get it either.
NASCAR drivers are there to do a job. They're there to drive the race car. Crew chiefs are there to figure out the best way to get to point A to B, which is green flag to checkered flag, while trying to beat everybody else. That's a part of the sport. Strategy has always been a part. Even when we were running on the beach at Daytona, it might not have been as elaborate, but there was still strategy involved. You know, there was still, you know, what if we run a 3-inch tire instead of a 4-inch tire? Maybe it'll be faster. You know, what if we run a 5-inch tire instead of a 4-inch tire? It might give us more grip. That's strategy, you know? Like, it doesn't matter if you're talking Daytona Beach, the beach, or Daytona Super Speedway or International Speedway. You're still going to have strategy, and it just, I don't know. It's the same thing you see in Formula One, team orders. Oh, we need you to finish in front of so-and-so for more team points. You know, same thing in IndyCar. I bet they have strategy in IndyCar.
Right. You know,
I think what the issue is and what people are upset about is the fact that they're driving slower. And I think that's why people are upset. But at the same time, it's like, that's called strategy. I'm going to drive slower. This way I can go a little further. You know, and it just, I don't know. That was probably one of the biggest controversies coming out of Talladega, other than them removing the scoring pylons. But people,
that was a big debate too, and that was really revealed.
Yeah, I didn't even look too far into it, but I saw that it's a big thing, and I'm like, okay, I'm confused, but we'll go with it. But it just, I don't know, it's weird. And like I said, it's strategy. That's what we do in the sport. We have strategy. I don't know what else to say.
Right. I don't know what to say either.
But cup race overall, pretty clean. We had two big accidents towards the end. One of them we kind of touched on with Eric Jones. He took a hard hit into the outside wall. Very similar to what we saw with Ryan Blaney last year at Daytona in August. Also, unfortunately, similar to a certain Daytona 500 wreck in 2001. Thankfully, safety has come a long way in the last 23 years. To both those drivers in August and this past weekend, we were able to walk away. Eric Jones gets out of the car. He's hurt. Jeff Gluck just released some onboard audio from it. I didn't get a chance to listen to it. He tweeted and said, tough audio to hear. Beware or be warned. Or else I would play it right now. But because of that, I'm not going to. I'd hate to play it and then have it.
Yeah, I listened to it.
Okay.
And watched it from obviously the onboard.
Was it tough? Like, what happened?
I mean, it wasn't tough, but I mean, once Eric Jones hits the wall, he literally you can hear him really tell his team, I don't think I'm okay. And then you can hear the team respond to what's wrong, and then Eric Jones says three times, my back.
Got it. So that's why it's tough, you know, because you're hearing basically a driver reaching out for help. You know, saying
right.
help. We heard it a couple or another race. I don't remember if it was last year or the year before, but similar with like Denny Hamlin. Denny Hamlin had an accident where he was just like, ow, 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 or help. He basically cried out and was just like, hey, you know, I need help. Thankfully, he was okay. But we also, similar audio, Eric Almirola in Kansas, when he was running the 10 car, the Smithfield car, he hit the wall, and he came across the radio and said something similar. But obviously, he then did hurt his back. He was out for rest of the season that year, I want to say, or at least half of it. But glad to hear, though, that Jones... Glad to hear he was checked and released. I hope that he's back. He's racing this weekend. You know? But, so we have that accident. Took out some big hitters, Hamlin, Wallace. And that was with about 30 or so to go. And then we get going again. And Michael McDowell, hands down, doing probably the best thing you could do at Talladega, which was block runs, stay out in front, do your best, come into the checkered flag. He's out in front. Keselowski goes high. He goes high. Keselowski goes low. He goes low. There are conversations out there saying that when McDowell went low, there was contact on the bumper, and he went around. My personal opinion is that he drove so hard down to the left that by the time he realized he needed to come back up to avoid from going below the double yellow, he turned hard to the right and his car got light from underneath him and went around. That's my opinion on it.
Pretty much when we pull, I think he did one block too many when he tried to go back down on Keselowski. I mean, obviously he kind of, he's not in the wrong, because obviously that's going to the check, but he kind of has to if he wants to try to, because Keselowski in that line, we're getting the inside line, we're getting that run. So McDowell kind of had to in order to stay out front, because if he doesn't block, he drops to who knows how far back.
Right.
So obviously he had to, but I think the way he did it, I think he turned the wheel too, even when he went down originally on Keselowski, like you said, he was going to go down below the yellow, so I think he turned the wheel too aggressively than he probably would have wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean,
I agree with you, because I think coming to the checkered flag, that's what you need to do, right? You need to make sure that you defend. If Keselowski goes high and he stays where he is, he's going to go back and Keselowski's going to go by him. You know, you never want to necessarily, unless you win the race, you don't want to ruin somebody else's, which unfortunately, by blocking the second time, he ruined Keselowski's chances of winning, because Reddick basically just said, okay, see you later, bye, and went by on the outside. But, you know, you got to do what you got to do. There's a chance. Right. There's a chance at the playoffs here. There's a chance to win Devin $10 on DraftKings. You know? Hey, man, I put 50 cents on him, and he almost won me $10.50, okay? But no, but in all seriousness, it's like, you're coming to the checkered flag. You're going to do what you have to do to try and win the race. And that's exactly what he did. And there's nothing wrong with it. You know, and you hate to see wrecked race cars. You hate to see Corey LaJoy go up, get sandwiched against the wall, come across the start-finish line on his driver door, flip over, roll over. Glad to see he's okay. But you hate to see that. You hate
made it for a cool way for him to finish the race, though. Not many drivers can say they finished the race upside down.
That's true. That's true, especially on their door. I mean, like I said, you hate to see race cars get wrecked, especially coming to the checkered flag. But at the end of the day, you're going to do what you got to do to try and win the race.
Right. And one thing I will say is, going back to the Eric Jones wreck, obviously that was kind of the talk of the race at the time, because obviously it was just the Toyotas in the pack and they kind of all wrecked. But I mean, I don't know if you saw the same thing, but I know I saw it, and I think it was John Hunter Nemechek doing John Hunter Nemechek things and not knowing when to stop. Because he sees he pushes Bubba Wallace hard enough, he hits Eric Jones, they both kind of lose it a little bit. But then Nemechek pushes Wallace again. And Wallace goes to Jones, and I kind of took both them out into the wall, and that's obviously where the Jones wreck happened. And then it clicked to Nemechek. Hamlin almost got out of it, but Nemechek came back down the track and took out Hamlin. So I think it was kind of more of John Hunter Nemechek and kind of, I guess the inexperience of him. Mm-hmm. The next gen car, because obviously that's kind of, because even Bubba Wallace said it, Eric Jones said it, Denny Hamlin said it, is you got to learn when not to push. Mm-hmm. And in that case, it was a time of not to push.
Right.
Because it seemed like, I mean, obviously Toyota ended up winning the race anyway, but it seemed like that strategy that those cars had, Hamlin, Jones, Wallace, Nemechek, it was going to work out at the end.
Right.
But obviously, they all pretty much wrecked out other than Nemechek, who ended up finishing, but he was laps down. But obviously, Toyota still ended up winning at the end of the day, which, I mean, is good enough for Toyota, especially for Hamlin, who kind of was like, oh, I had a car in that wreck. Oh, and I'm in it, too. And he ends up having one of his drivers, his last driver, finishing and winning the race.
Right. Obviously, Hamlin. Go ahead.
One cool thing, too, was it was Michael Jordan's first time at the race where 2311 actually won. I mean, obviously, he's gone to a lot of races, but the few times he doesn't, obviously, 2311's pretty much won. Mm-hmm. And obviously, so it was cool to see him actually being at the track and to see one of his cars win for the first time, like, in person. Obviously, the 2311's won a few times since it became a team, but that was the first time that Michael Jordan was actually at the track and he saw a 2311 win. And just to see his reaction, like him holding Tyler Reddick's son, kind of all happy. And it was cool to see Michael Jordan have a reaction like that. Because it goes to show you, I mean, obviously, yeah, he's arguably one of the greatest basketball players of all time. So he's not kind of a guy you would see owning a NASCAR team. But obviously, it goes to show you how much of a fan he is of the sport when you see him have a reaction like that. Exactly. For being at a track for the first time, seeing one of your cars win.
Especially, yeah, as you mentioned, with, you know, being a team owner as well, like, that's a huge thing where you're just like, oh my goodness, we did that. You know, we as a team did that. And, you know, and as you mentioned, him being at the racetrack, yeah, he's at the track plenty of times, but to be at the track and see one of his drivers win and, you know, be able to be in victory lane, and it's great. It's awesome, and I'm super happy for them.
And because obviously Danny's always at the victory lane when they win, because obviously he's at the track anyway. He's in the same race anyway. But that was the first, so it was cool to see Jordan and Hamlin and be able to celebrate in victory lane together for the first time as owners.
Exactly. I mean, and you never want to see Denny Hamlin get out of a race early, but the fact that he could show up in street clothes, you know, and be an owner instead of I'm a driver. Okay, now I got to go do my media responsibilities. Like, he was done. You know, like, he was, and I think he even said that, like, he was ready to leave the racetrack when then Reddick won, right? Or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's awesome for them. I'm happy for 2311 Racing. And, you know, it's great because, as you know, new teams in the sport take forever to get any real traction. And these two kind of jumped, this team jumped in, and it, within 2 years, 3 years of being there, they're winning races, you know, they're making playoffs, you know, it's great. Great for them. Good for them.
I mean, what was talked about in the pre-race all day and the whole week leading up was, this feels like a race that Ford has to win. Obviously, they've won so many times at Talladega, especially Ryan Blaney being mainly the forefront, Kozlowski obviously winning six times there, all in Ford, but with Toyota winning, obviously, because Harvick, I don't know if you saw the pre-race at all, but Harvick, they did a segment at a driving range where Harvick talked to all four JGR drivers, Hamlin, Truex, Bell, and Gibbs. Mm-hmm. And he said, and they said, this feels like it's a Hendrick Motorsports versus Joe Gibbs Racing. Because obviously, Hendrick Motorsports has five wins, JGR has three.
Yeah.
If I'm not, because this was race number 9, right?
Yes, I believe so, yes.
So, they've all won every single race leading up to Talladega. And then, now you have Reddick winning, who's not JGR, but he's technically JGR affiliated because Hamlin because 2311 uses JGR equipment, so they have the alliance.
Right.
Because Hank drives for JGR. So kind of, it's JGR kind of winning, but it's also just Toyota again. So it kind of just shows Chevy and Toyota's dominance, which kind of, maybe it's both of them having, actually the Ford does too. Chevy was one that did not get a new body. But maybe something with the Ford body that just doesn't give them, I mean, obviously you had Kozlowski finished second for the second straight week. You had Gregson finished third, which we didn't talk about, but Gregson finishing third was great to see him have a run like that.
Yep.
I think Gregson's probably been the best Stuart Haas racing driver.
I mean, Josh Berry's been up there too some weeks, but yes, I know what you're saying. It, for Stuart Haas racing, not to sidetrack your thought here, but for Stuart Haas racing, I think all four of them are having... They're playing well to their strengths. Like, Briscoe is up there a little bit this weekend. Josh Berry did well at Bristol. You know, Gregson did well this weekend. Ryan Preece did well at Daytona as well as Richmond. Like, they're all playing to their strengths, but the issue with that is that they have specific skill sets. You know, not to sound like Liam Neeson in Taken, but, like, you know, they have very specific, like, Preece is really good at the short tracks, because that's what he grew up on. You know, Briscoe's really good at the loose tracks because he was a dirt racer. You know, Gregson seems to be good everywhere to an extent, but, you know, he really knows the super speedway stuff. You know, so it's like what Stuart Haas Racing, in my opinion, needs to do is make it so that everybody becomes well-rounded, because you're right, Gregson had a great weekend. He's doing great this weekend. He's probably one of the better ones at Stuart Haas because of that fact that he seems a little bit more well-rounded, whereas everybody else, like I said, is very specific. You know, like the dirt track, Briscoe, boom. You know, short tracks, Preece, boom. You know, Josh Berry with short tracks, boom. Whereas Gregson's kind of like, I can do everything.
Right.
So, anyways, go on.
But obviously, kind of, I mean, Ford has yet to win a race in any of the three national series. Because obviously, Jesse loves Chevy, that's RCR.
Mm-hmm.
Truck, Ford has not won. Mm-mm. And Cup, they haven't won. So obviously, it's kind of, I mean, obviously, we talked about Ford last year, how they weren't as dominant as Chevy and, Ford, and Toyota, but obviously, Ford won all three championships.
Right.
Last year, so obviously Ford kind of had the last laugh. But right now, I don't know, for the Cup side, if it's the new body that, like, maybe the new Dark Horse Mustang, it isn't really that good, or if they're just not used to it yet. But Toyota has the new body too with the Camry, and I don't think Toyota's been on a roll like this early in the season before.
Right. No, I agree. I don't know. It's interesting, and unlike other racing series, Ford can't necessarily say, okay, hey, during the summer break, we're going to reevaluate. Like, this is what you got. You got to figure it out on the fly. So, and the fact that Ford had a, you know, McDowell was going to, if we were running at Daytona, McDowell won this race.
Yep.
You know, Keselowski finished second. Gregson finished third. So Ford had a weekend. They just lost it in the last 2,000 feet. And,
yes,
you know, and again, not saying it's anybody's fault. Like, it's not like, oh, well, it's because of, like, no, we're not pointing fingers. We're going for the win. You know, yeah, we're teammates up until, you know, like, we don't give playoff points because you helped a teammate, like, or a manufacturer. So it's definitely, they had a good weekend. They have the strength. It's just they can't seem to finish. It's kind of like Denny Hamlin's driving career in championships. And I'm only saying that because Jordan's a Denny Hamlin fan. But you know what I mean? Like, it, and again, I'm not trying to pick on Denny Hamlin, but I'm saying in general, Ford, they have the strength. They're there. They just can't win the races.
Right. And someone like Brad Keselowski, like you said, I'm a Hamlin fan. I am a Toyota supporter because, you know, I support all the JGR drivers, and obviously being a Hamlin fan, I support the 2311 drivers as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel bad for Brad Keselowski. he gets quite, I mean, it's not like he's been bad ever since that Penske. He's been great with RFK. RFK has had a resurgence ever since Kozlowski became part owner with Buescher and obviously now Brad K. But Kozlowski has not won a race since April of 2021 at Talladega. That was his last year with Team Penske. He has yet to win in what is now his third year with RFK.
Yep.
So I feel bad. I mean, that's obviously not saying, oh, you shouldn't have let Penske. Obviously, when you have a chance to be an owner and still drive, you're always going to take that.
Right.
Kind of like what Hamlin's doing now. Obviously, Hamlin's not driving for his own race team, but Kozlowski's been an owner. He knows he owned a pretty successful truck team a few years back, but Kozlowski gets so close what feels like every single week.
Right.
Obviously, he finished second at Texas last week. He finished if I know McDowell spun, but if McDowell never hit, if Kozlowski never got caught stuck behind McDowell when McDowell originally spun, I think Kozlowski wins because obviously Kozlowski being trapped behind McDowell and kind of making contact slowed McDowell down and got Reddick past Kozlowski.
Right.
So I think if that doesn't happen, if McDowell doesn't spin, I think McDowell probably wins it anyway.
Yeah, McDowell
it might be close, but obviously there's no way to know now.
Right, McDowell kind of got caught on Kozlowski's bumper. Like, he kind of, if he had came down and then just swiped and went right back up the racetrack, he might have honestly gotten Reddick. But, like, you're right. I think that there's, with Gregson behind Kozlowski, it's going to either be close or he's going to win. So,
right. So, obviously, Kozlowski probably wins if he doesn't get trapped behind McDowell when McDowell went sideways. But, I mean, there's just no one who, I don't think I've ever felt this bad for a driver on a winless streak than Brad Kozlowski. I mean, obviously, when you're now on exactly 3 years since you last won a race, I mean, that can't be fun.
Right.
And obviously, Kozlowski still has all the confidence in the world. All his pre-race interviews, post-race interviews, he's all smiling and stuff. But obviously, kind of yesterday, he was kind of dejected because he was like, he loves finishing second, but obviously when you finish second so many times without a win, it kind of just gets annoying. It's like, yeah, because he even said it yesterday. He goes, yeah, at this point, I don't care where I finish. I just want at least a win.
Exactly. And I mean, he finished third or second last week at Texas too, right?
Second.
So that is a tough situation.
And I mean, I guess one thing we can talk about too is, Brad Kozlowski's 14th in points right now. So obviously he's on the playoffs in points. Obviously not probably where he wants to be in points, 14th, because that obviously means he would be eliminated in the round of 16. Mm-hmm. But one thing we can talk about too is the Kyle Larson penalty.
Yes. I did not do much research on this, but I heard that because of the rails on his roof.
Well, actually, they said what NASCAR said is while they were pushing Kyle Larson's car to the grid for qualifying, they changed them as they were doing moving them to the grid.
Oh, okay. Yikes! That's a no-no.
Enough. Yesterday, they obviously just said Larson will serve a pass through, which didn't really cost him too much. Yeah, he was a lap down, but like it looked like he was leading because he was right there. I mean, when Sinjic wins stage one and Larson's right there, it looks like Larson was going to win. But obviously, in reality, he was a lap down.
Right.
But what people have been saying is that NASCAR wants to be consistent. They give the same penalty they gave to Gregson and Priest a few weeks ago with the same thing with the roof, and they lost like 50 points, I think, for both drivers.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we won't find out until tomorrow, I believe, if that's the case, if Kyle Larson has pit members suspended, he loses owner points, driver points. But if he does, Kyle Larson is the points leader right now. So depending on how many points he loses, that could bump Schumacher to the points lead.
Right.
He's only 15 points behind Larson. But the top six in points right now, I'm looking at, actually taking the top seven, are less than 60 points away from each other. Blaney's seventh in points, and he's 57 points away from being the points leader, which seems like a lot, but in reality, it's really not. Mm-mm. I mean, Larson has a bad week, and Blaney wins a race or finishes second. Blaney is closes out by, like, 30 points.
Yeah.
That's... So in reality, the top six, which is right now, is Larson, Truex, Elliott, Byron, Reddick, Hamlin, and Blaney. I mean, it's been a fun season so far, other than the short tracks. So obviously that's always going to be an issue until the short track package is actually fixed.
Hey, Richmond wasn't bad. We started in the wet. That was entertaining.
Yeah, for the first 20 laps, and then they went back to the dry, so it was like, oh, yeah. Man.
Darn it. Yeah.
Phoenix was Phoenix. Phoenix was just like, oh my God, we don't even talk about Phoenix.
Bristol was fun because the tires came apart.
But also, Bristol doesn't use the short track package.
That's true, which I still don't understand that, but whatever. A short track, but not using a short track pack. Okay.
I mean, I think everyone at this point, especially with how the tires came, everyone's just like, just keep running the Bristol tire for short tracks. You go to New Hampshire, run the same tires. You go to Richmond again, run the same tire. Go to Bristol, do it again.
Can we run the Super Speedway package at Bristol and run the short track package at Dega? No, but I mean, yeah, going back to what you were saying, it's, yeah. I have no further thoughts. You said everything right.
I mean, overall, NASCAR's had a really good season so far. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, when you look at the negatives, they can be glaring, but at the end of the day, they have been good.
You know NASCAR has had a good season when Texas has a good cup race.
That's and yet people still want to tear that place up and redo it.
Because we might have been a lucky shot.
Guess we'll find out.
But Texas, I mean, when Texas has a good race weekend and everyone was like, oh, this track stinks, get rid of it. Don't even keep it. Give it the Kentucky treatment or the Chicagoland treatment. I was like, just take it off the schedule.
Jeez Louise.
It's good. I mean, granted, New Hampshire was like that for the longest time. Everyone was like, oh, New Hampshire stinks. Oh, New Hampshire? Oh, that's a weekend I cannot watch and not really miss anything, but New Hampshire's been on the come up, which obviously for us, we like because that's our home track. So
heck,
it's
yeah.
It's like, yay, we don't have the most boring track anymore.
Yeah, no, yeah,
let's go.
I mean, but as we've talked about before, every track has their ebbs and flows. You know, there was a time.
Unless you're Daytona or Talladega.
But no, but even then, Daytona, Talladega, when they had the two car tandem.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, what are we doing? So much and so that then they had to make adjustments.
And to be honest, nowadays, when like Daytona had the big one, but Talladega had the big one near the end, when I feel like nowadays when Daytona or Talladega like don't have the big one, which I don't think Talladega had really a big one last year, everyone's like, oh, Talladega stunk. Where was all the wrecks at?
Right.
Usually like four cars finished the race, which I guess this was technically the case. I mean, technically a lot more drivers finished, but I mean, Reddick, Keselowski, Gregson, and I don't even know who finished fourth. Who finished fourth? I'll look it up.
I'm not sure off the top of my head, but I know what you're. While you look that up, I know what you're saying. And
like, Stenhouse finished fourth. I mean, everyone else was pretty much sideways, up or upside down when they crossed the finish line. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's also like I will say that it's, you know, the saying, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. It's those fans that say, this was a bad race. Why was it a bad race? They didn't wreck. Okay, well, we don't have to wreck every week. Like,
yeah.
Like we can, like, I mean, and the same thing with Loudon. Like, I remember there were times up here at New Hampshire where it was like, that was a bad race. And it's like, was it? Like I remember going to the races, and yeah, sure. You know, there were some races where it was just 300 laps of green flag racing, and it was like, Kyle Busch won by 12 seconds, you know, whatever. But it's like, even then, it wasn't bad. Like, Like, even last year's race where people were like, Loudon was one of the best races on the schedule. You have to admit that there was at some point during that race, we were both thinking, oh, my gosh. You know, because just like Daytona in August, when I was there with my friends and family, that third stage, we were just following the leader to the point where I was like, maybe I'll go run to the merchandise stand. Like they were just, and that's Daytona. So my point is every track has it. You know, you look at COTA, that's super exciting until they string out. You know, Bristol, before they put the dirt on, it was just single file, top lane, you know. It got exciting when you started lapping people. Like, every track has their ebbs and flows, and that's the way it goes.
Right.
You know? So, anyways, any final thoughts on Dega?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think we covered everything for the most part. I think overall, glad we got it in. I think this should be a lesson to everybody that the weather can change. Like, I mean, I deal with the weather all the time with filming high school sports and everything. And
I'm going to a lot this summer because I'm working in racing. So
yeah, exactly. Like, you show up because you never know, unless it's like a hurricane. I mean, you know what? Let me back that up. Even a hurricane sometimes changes. Not to keep talking about Daytona, but last year, my sister and I went there for the race. We planned to fly out Tuesday. There was a hurricane coming, so we moved our flight up to Monday to fly out Monday. We got home Monday night, and the hurricane didn't even make landfall till Thursday when it was supposed to make landfall Tuesday. So even when you have a hurricane, things change. So show up to the racetrack, and yeah, it might stink that you have to sit there for a couple hours and watch it rain and possibly have to come back tomorrow, but you never know. Maybe bring a camper next time. That's what we do. But looking ahead, we have Dover, and I believe it's Xfinity and Cup there this weekend. Dover's always a fun track. I think Dover's also one of those other tracks that can be hit or miss. Some races, they're really good, and some races, they're eh. What are your thoughts going into the Monster Mile?
I always like watching Dover races. I mean, like you said, it's hit or miss. I mean, it's a mile, but it doesn't feel like a mile just because the bangings are, like, next level. Mm-hmm. So, like, Dover's the same size as New Hampshire, but obviously New Hampshire's flat. Dover has all the banking, so it doesn't really race like a mile. But I thought Dover last year was pretty good, so I'm looking forward to hopefully it's the same this weekend.
If you look at Dover and New Hampshire's layouts, Dover, so they're both a mile, roughly, and Dover's kind of more of a squished mile, whereas New Hampshire's more of like a paperclip. You know, longer straightaways, tighter corners, whereas Dover's kind of like Bristol in a sense, where it's shorter straightaways, wider corners. But regardless, I know what you're saying. Like, these are New Hampshire and Dover are 2 1-mile ovals on the schedule who are completely opposite of each other. Owned by the same company now, but completely opposite of each other. No, I mean, I agree with you. Last year, they were good races. They ran on Monday last year because of the Sunday race getting rained out. And that was, if I remember correctly, Martin Truex Jr. on Monday. Monday.
Monday.
But I think good races last year. Super excited to see how they do this weekend. And it should be good racing. I think so.
It's going to be, I'm looking at the weather just because I'm curious. It's going to be 77 degrees on Cup race day in Dover, Delaware.
Oof. Bring the pools for the campground, folks. That's going to be a hot one. Gosh. And on concrete too, even better. So, I mean, that might bring up the tire conversation. So I guess we'll have to see, what happens this weekend.
I mean, if we were racing it louder this weekend, it'd be 73.
Nice. We're headed over.
So this looks like they come to the Northeast at the right time.
So hold on a minute here. Let's back this up. So DPPG is going over to Cooperstown, New York for a baseball game on Thursday. We're looking at 50s, maybe low 50s. And then by the time we come home, it's going to be 80. Why can't we have that weekend, that weather on Thursday? Like, we're going to be freezing our butts off over in upstate New York, and then we come home to shorts.
And literally, in Cooperstown on Friday, is going to be over 60, so.
Son of a
God. I don't know. Maybe it's a you thing.
Jeez. All right. Well, either way, should be a good weekend. I'm excited to see how the Cup cars handle. As I've said multiple times, and as I said earlier in this show, every year with these cars, they just get, in my opinion, they get better and better and better. You know, you saw year one with the next-gen car at Loudon. Good. Second year, okay, we're getting there. This year should be really good, in my opinion. You're seeing that with other tracks, too. So, should be interesting to see how they react to Dover. And, of course, it's the Monster Miles, so it should be a good race.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts going forward or leaving Talladega or anything before we make our picks for Dover?
No, I don't think so. I think I'm good.
All right. So here's what we'll do. Give me three picks. They can be finished anywhere in the top three. It doesn't have to be like a winner, first, second, third, but just three drivers for this weekend.
Truex.
Okay.
Oof. The tank for Dover's tough. I'm trying to think like who's been like Dover's not really a track where someone dominates, I feel like, where it's like, oh yeah, they're good, this person's gonna win.
Unless it's a Monday, then it's Martin Truex Jr.
then it's Martin Truex. I mean, jeez. I'll say Truex though, obviously, just because he's the defending race winner, and you can't deny the defending race winner. Mm-hmm. Kyle Larson's another one, but again, wouldn't is Kyle Larson not someone to look at?
Mm-hmm.
And then the third one, I can honestly see Ty Gibbs. I mean, Ty Gibbs has had a strong year, so.
Interesting.
He's hit seven tracks like that, so.
Interesting. So I'm going to go Denny Hamlin, Chase Elliott, and honestly, Brad Keselowski.
Ooh, Brad Keselowski is a good one.
I mean, he hasn't necessarily, like, Keselowski's known for the mile and a half and the super speedways, but. You can only finish second so many times.
Right.
You know, you can't beat a team three times in a season, so here we are.
I mean, it's like, it's kind of like Chase Elliott. He won at Texas last week, and he finished top five in like three, four races prior to that, so obviously it's going to happen at some point, and Keselowski, I feel like he's due.
I agree.
Like, Keselowski, I feel like gets a one within the next couple weeks. I don't say couple. I want to say few.
I agree. Switch gears real quick. Are the Bruins going to win the Stanley Cup this year, or are you a first or second round exit? Real talk. Don't be a Boston fan.
I mean, obviously, we'll make it out of the first round because we're playing Toronto. And, you know, I mean, Toronto hasn't beaten the Bruins in the playoffs in like almost 100 years. It's really been like 70, but it's the same thing.
Still a long time.
A lot of the teams in the NHL didn't exist the last time the Leafs beat the Bruins. Last time they did was in 1959. And it's not like we don't play each other a lot. We've played each other like five times since 2018. So, Bruins definitely make it out of the first round. I don't even know who we play in the second round.
You play Tampa or Panthers?
Okay, if you play Tampa, we would make it out of the second round. If you play Florida, we probably won't.
I'm a Rangers fan. I hope that we win against the Capitals. I don't know where we would go after that, but I know that I can buy Stanley Cup final tickets for Madison Square Garden right now for $6,000.
Oh, okay.
I know. My point is that it's just funny how they're already selling them, and it's like, can we get through first round? And I was looking at that Saturday night. Like, we hadn't even played game one yet. Like, it was like, why? But anyways.
You put this on now.
I'm, I'm, Not that I'm like a Boston sports hater, but like I'm pulling for Toronto just for the storyline. But good luck to you as well.
Storyline.
That would be one heck of a storyline. They break the curse.
Yeah.
Be like the Red Sox in 04.
They break the first round Bruins curse.
They shift the curse. Now, we'll see. Obviously, game two for you guys are tonight. Game two for us is tomorrow night. So we'll have to see how that goes. But, yeah. Anyways.
If you ask me, the Celtics were winning it all.
Okay. All right. I don't follow NBA close enough. So
the Celtics are winning it all.
All right. I'll take your word for it.
And the Red Sox are the Red Sox, and they're not going to do nothing. So.
The Red Sox, that should be the title of this podcast, this episode. The Red Sox are the Red Sox. Like, that's it. All right. Well, Jordan, if you don't have any final thoughts, then we'll wrap up this episode. Want to say thank you for coming on. Appreciate it.
Of course.
Only got 19 days left of being a college kid, and I know you're excited to get into the real world, but it sucks because in 6 months you have to start paying back your student loans.
Well, so. I don't know if I'm really in the real world. I mean, I'm pretty much all summer. I'm going to be at a racetrack, so I don't know if you want to count that the real world.
I guess I can see where you're coming from.
I'm going to be working at the point where it's going to be like, can you even call this a job because it's how fun it is?
That's not a bad thing. All right, well, for Jordan Jenkins, I'm Devin Postlesny, and I want to say thank you all so much for tuning in. Don't forget to follow us on social media. Promise we won't take another 3-week break after this. I can actually talk now. And we hope you have a great rest of your day and your week. Enjoy Dover, and we'll see you all real soon.